Hey, we are live. Hey, folks, I'm tuning into the Banff Podcast. I'm your host, Mike Lafferty, and this is my sinister goatee. And with us today is Mr. Owen Stevens, who I've been referring to you as the godfather of Starfinder, but I'm sure there's a more appropriate title.
My official title at work is the Starfinder Design Lead. That makes me sort of the trifecta of people that are not just Starfinder, developers. The developers do a lot of the very important award-winning work on that line. We also have a creative director, which is Rob McCreary, and a managing developer. So I don't mind being called the godfather, but everyone on that team touches almost every product in a really important way.
Understood. And co-hosting today is frequent co-host Jacob Blackman. How you doing, Jacob?
Hello, doing well. Recovering from a cold, and sorry you can't see me, but I just got a new computer, and the camera seems to be the last bug I haven't worked out yet.
No worries. Wait, Owen, what is new with Starfinder these days?
There's some really exciting things going on with Starfinder. We just got nominated for an Origins Award for the Pack Worlds book, which is our first big hardback source book, which talks about sort of the home system of the Pack Worlds. Mm-hmm. And that's really exciting for us because we actually got nominated and won an Origins Award, the Fan Favorite RPG Award for Origins last year for the core rulebook. So that's two nominations in 2 years, and we won last year. Just being nominated for an Origins Award is a significant honor. There's a lot of really good RPG material coming out these days, and I am kind of humbled that what we're doing with those books is getting so much attention and so many people seem to be into it. And if you are into Starfinder or not and you want to be into Starfinder, the other big news we have is that our beginner box is out. It's out at your front of your local gaming store, and it's an introduction to the world and an introduction to RPGs. I know a lot of people are using this to teach RPGs to their friends or children, or for that matter, in some cases, parents. People that are geek and genre savvy and maybe game savvy, but aren't RPG people specifically. And it's really designed to allow you to move very, very quickly into, okay, this is why this is fun and cool, rather than having to spend hours and hours learning rules.
And those beginner boxes make great gifts for new gamers.
And the beginner boxes make great gifts. That's true. And our beginner box, I mean, it's got everything you need except pencils, right? There are character sheets and dice and a map. There's an introductory adventure. There's a solo adventure. It's not very long, but it's enough that if you pick up that box, or as my experience suggests might occur, if your grandma buys you the box without having any idea that you're supposed to have friends to play it, it gives you an opportunity to get started and get some experience with it. Back when I was first role-playing, there were long stretches where I had no group, and I was very much into the Tunnels and Trolls solo adventures for exactly that reason. I could sit around and have fun and learn the rules and play, even though I did not live where there were a lot of children nearby.
Yeah, and, you know, Mother's Day is coming up.
Yeah, Mother's Day is totally coming up. If your mother is interested in anything geeky or anything game-related, I obviously am biased, but I encourage you to pick up a copy of the Starfinder Beginner Box. Or for that matter, any RPG box. There are a lot of starting RPG boxes out there that are, in my opinion, very well done. We looked at a lot of them when we were building this box and sort of analyzed what we thought worked well and what we thought we could improve upon or problems we could potentially duck.
Excellent. And so that's available right now from local game stores. If you look in our show notes, we'll have a link to the Paizo page, where you can order that. So check it out. It'll be a good time. Now, you're doing a live stream later on today, right?
Yeah, I will be on Obsidian Oath. That is the official Paizo Pathfinder 2nd Edition Let's Play stream. It's myself and Sarah Marie and Gabe and Katina and Jason Bowman, who is our director of games, is the game master for that game.
Okay, and if someone wants to check that out, how do they see that?
That's on the twitch.com/officialpaizo. It's the official Paizo page, but also the Paizo Facebook and Twitter boosts it. My Facebook and Twitter boosts it. Bowman does. All of us try and make sure it's very easy. And then if you can't watch it live, all of the Twitch videos are available for replay later on Twitch, or you can go to YouTube where they're uploaded about a week later.
Okay, cool. And what time should they tune to Twitch if they want to see that?
It is noon Pacific for doing it live. And so then there's a replay every Saturday on Twitch, and generally speaking, at least Jason will come on and chat with people during the replay.
Okay, cool. Well, hey, we had originally built this podcast as let's do a compare and contrast between different space opera RPGs. Uh-huh. Specifically, we're talking about The Expanse as compared to Starfinder. And before the podcast, we're talking about how they're, you know, one's more science fantasy and one's more hard science. And now you had kind of interesting insight into that. Could you share that again for our listeners?
Sure. So The Expanse starts as a very, very hard science setting. And you can question a little bit whether or not their drive system is realistic and things like that. They really have a very serious look at what would it take for humanity to move around the solar system? What would the planetary political systems be? What would happen if people were living in low gravity for long periods of time? And I don't want to spoil anything for people that aren't deep into the book series, but things get introduced. And if you've watched the television series and you're up to date, you've seen a good deal of that introduction, that make things less and less and less connected to hard science, that there are become more and more reasonable, perhaps, rational, still science fiction, not full science fantasy, but more and more away from the hard science. So it sort of starts in the very concrete and grounded and moves into a more fantastical, if not fantasy, area. Starfinder, on the other hand, quite clearly evolved from Pathfinder. We literally have the same cosmology and the same universe, just set well in the future. And Pathfinder is almost entirely fantasy role-playing game. We do have like Numenera and a bunch of areas that add science fiction elements here and there. But it starts as a very strongly fantasy system. And then both in the original Pathfinder, where eventually they did things like the technology guide, introducing more and more of that mix of science fiction that sort of Barrier Peaks kind of put some sci-fi in your fantasy. By the time you reach Starfinder, we've added a lot of science fiction to the fantasy. So that it starts way over here with the fantastical and moves towards, well, here's some science that could be added as technology evolves, whereas The Expanse starts very, very grounded and moves, and they don't meet, right? There's still a distinction between a very grounded reality that has more fantastic elements and something where everyone accepts that the gods are real and magic are a thing, and you can summon a genie. That genie just might happen to have a pulse rifle. There's a gap between those two, but I do find it's interesting that each of them started in one place and moved more towards including elements of both.
Yeah, that is interesting. I mean, of course, there are no elves in The Expanse, but...
Well, but there could be if someone decided to use the big technological gimme to make them.
Fair enough. That's cool. And now The Expanse, as we should mention, that's Kickstarter is being fulfilled, and that's going on sale soon, right?
Yeah. Green Ronin has The Expanse license. They did a Kickstarter for it. I am a Green Ronin alumnus, so I've been privileged to get to see some of the behind-the-scenes stuff on that. And if Steve Kenson were here right now, he would be able to tell you much more about how awesome it is. But it's using the AGE system, which, if you've seen Modern Age or Fantasy Age, has been kind of stripped back to the core of what that system is and then built up so that we can have things like the churn, which for Expanse fans, they will understand that term, and make something that will allow you to have an in-depth experience but is easily contained in a single book. And there are a lot of cool things about The Expanse that you can get visually. You know, one of the big differences between the two systems, between how The Expanse does things and how Starfinder does things, for example, are starships, right? For Starfinder, we very specifically hand-waved travel time as much as we could because we didn't want people to have to do any hard calculations in order to fly around. You still don't have to do hard calculations in The Expanse RPG because we didn't want you to have some sort of math degree in order to play this game. But it comes from a very more grounded place on what's your acceleration, what's your deceleration, what do starships look like if they don't have to worry about aerodynamics because they're not going to endure an atmosphere. The Expanse is, maybe famous is too strong a word, but fans of it are aware that one of the descriptions are that their starships tend to look like office buildings laying on their side flying through space. They're square and blocky and functional. And getting that look right for the RPG was something that was very, very important, not just for starships, but for everything. So I'm really looking forward to seeing the final version and having a copy in my hand, and I encourage both people who are just looking to pick up something that can be used for a very grounded sci-fi game and then expand out as you want, and fans of the show and the books and the Age system in general to pick it up. I think they're going to be very satisfied with it.
Well, as someone who participated in the Expanse Kickstarter, last week, they released the PDFs. So if you participated in the Kickstarter and you got a PDF reward, you should have them available now.
Yeah. And then Green Ronin wants the people that back the Kickstarter to get to see this first, which I think is just fair and reasonable. The other thing is that if someone says, hey, you numbered these pages 66, 66, 67, we can go, oops, and fix that before it is permanently in print. But I think they've been sent off to the printer now. But as I said, I'm an alumnus of Green Ronin, so in addition to my other jobs, I'm a full-time Paizo guy now, so I don't keep as careful track as the logistics. But I've seen a lot of the previews of it and the PDF, and I think it's going to be very, very popular and cool.
Yeah, there's a quick start out. We'll put the link in our show notes. People can check that out.
Yep.
It seems like we're on the verge of public release sometime soon. But as you say, there's always kind of a shakedown where we try to find typos and whatnot. So.
Yeah, I mean, the advantage of letting Kickstarter people see it early is that they get a sneak peek. The if there is a drawback, it's that they will see it before we have necessarily made every cleanup pass and caught every error. But then again, they can help us do that. So it's a give and take.
Okay, cool. Now, you also run Rogue Genius Games. Would you want to talk about that at all?
I'll mention it in passing. Rogue Genius Games is a small company that's run by myself and LJ Stevens, my wife, and Stan. With an exclamation point, Stan. And it's a small, largely PDF print-on-demand based company that mostly publishes third-party material for other game systems. So we do a lot of Starfinder stuff, a lot of Pathfinder stuff, a little bit of 5th edition. We have some small number of either generic things or standalone games. We did Gingerbread Kaiju, which is a game of edible giant monsters destroying the city. And we currently have a Kickstarter going for a first edition Pathfinder monster book called Gruesome Foes, which provides templates and example monsters that have been applied to for first edition Pathfinder to make things particularly frightening. We use the tagline, remind your players why most people don't become adventurers. I'm a big fan of Pathfinder. One of the reasons I work at Paizo is that I'm a huge fan of first edition Pathfinder. Since I'm getting to play it on stream, I can also say that I'm really enjoying second edition Pathfinder. Obviously, I helped write Starfinder, so I'm a fan of that. I think that one of the reasons that Paizo has been as successful as it has been is that they are very open to and friendly with third-party publishers. So it's easy for a lot of people to support these things. We've got Legendary and Wright Publishing, who I help as a producer, and lots of other companies do a lot of material. And it looks like we have a Steve.
We have a Steve.
Have a Steve.
Welcome, Steve.
I don't know if Steve can hear us.
Steve might be figuring out his audio. Steve, legendary RPG designer Steve Kenson has crept in from the shadows and will be speaking to us hopefully momentarily.
A wild Steve arrives. I've said more than once that Steve is who I want to be when I grow up.
I wouldn't mind being Steve when I grow up either. He's an admirable human being.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now we're all... Steve's just keeping us in anticipation.
He's worth the wait, I promise.
Yeah, understood. So what else is going on with Rogue Genius while we're waiting?
Steve just said, sorry, my audio isn't working.
Other news of Rogue Genius Games, the stuff that I know, I have just released a new PDF for Superpowered Legends through Rogue Genius Games. Freestyle, he's a parkour, savate-wielding criminal mercenary to thwart your heroes. So if you need a fun villain who has his own mercenary organization, feel free to pick him up and beat up your good guys with him.
Does he have a French accent or a Belgian accent?
He is Belgian.
Oh, okay.
Like the waffle.
Like the waffle. So, Steve, I heard some crackling on your end. Are you here now?
No, clearly not. The other thing that I think is worth mentioning that is coming up sort of for Starfinder, but just in general if you're a fan of Paizo, is that PaizoCon is coming up towards the end of this month. And I realize not everyone can make it to PaizoCon, but the No Direction podcast do an excellent job, or at least they have in the past. No guarantees what will happen in the future. They do an excellent job of recording a lot of the seminars and broadcasting the preview dinner, which is where, for example, we have a tendency to make new announcements of things upcoming for Paizo. So I recommend any fans of any of those shows, any of those games, keep an eye out and an ear out for what we'll be announcing at the end of the week. Steve, do we have you now?
Yes, I believe you do.
Hi, Steve.
Hey, Steve Kenson of Green Ronin and various other enterprises. How you doing, Steve?
I'm doing well, thanks. How are you guys?
We're all right. Hey, your ears may have been burning because just a few minutes ago we were talking about The Expanse.
Yes.
And
Go ahead.
No, we're here to listen to you. Please, you go ahead.
We're actually just now getting the crowd under the backer kit up online for Expanse, and getting we've gotten responses from most of the backers at this point, I believe. I think we're still waiting to hear from a few, so things are actually in the process of getting the actual books shipped out to the backers. So we're very much looking forward to that.
Cool. That's good news. Any kind of rough time frame on when it'll go on sale to the general public?
Well, the books will go out to the backers first, and some of that will depend on how quickly everybody gets back to us as far as that goes. But I would imagine that after that point, books will start shipping into distribution. So hopefully folks will be seeing the book in the stores within a matter of weeks at this point.
Oh, okay. That's very exciting. Cool.
The important thing is that if you want to get your copy signed by, say, Steve, Gen Con would be a good opportunity to do that.
Gen Con would be a good opportunity to do that, yes.
Gen Con, still in Indianapolis. All right. Well,
I don't foresee it moving anytime soon.
Yeah, they're considering Indianapolis is bending over backwards to acquiesce to Gen Con's demands. And it's like, we want better Wi-Fi. Sure, here we are working on better Wi-Fi connections. We need a bigger space. Here, we've made this huge expanse to our convention building. They are making sure that Gen Con is happy.
No, conventions are a big business in Indianapolis. I understand. I lived there for 20 years. I used to be a waiter in downtown Indianapolis. I understand conventions are a big part of the economy of that town. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Just every once in a while in my role as a teeny tiny publisher, someone's like, hey, you going to Gen Con? I'm like, man, I got out of Indiana, you know? And you don't go back willingly, usually. You know, you wait for a funeral or something. But,
I hear that.
Yeah. So, Steve, we were talking about the differences and comparisons between Starfinder and The Expanse. And Owen had interesting insight how they both start at different sides of the hard science fiction versus science fantasy spectrum, but they both kind of slowly work their way, you know, towards the middle as Starfinder gets more technical and The Expanse has its own fantastical elements that we won't spoil for various people who may not be reading the books or watching the show.
Yeah, that's certainly true.
Okay, if you were talking to someone about the two games, what are the highlights and how would you compare and contrast them?
Well, I would tend to say that the Expanse is definitely, although it does, as you say, have some fantastical elements to it, is very much about sort of humanity's future. And is very much a human story in terms of the different cultures and nations and factions that are involved in the overall arc of the story. Starfinder is definitely very much has a lot of fantasy elements. It's very much, you know, Pathfinder in space in a lot of ways, takes a lot of advantage of having, you know, such a fictional setting that you don't necessarily have to work within the constraints of, real world astronomy or, you know, the arrangement of the solar system or anything else so far as that's concerned.
Would it be fair to call Age a much lighter system than Starfinder?
I would tend to say so. I think that Starfinder is definitely a more detailed system than the Age system is. Age tends to leave a lot of wiggle room for things. We provide a lot of really basic tools in the forms of the different types of tests that you can use to resolve things, and then kind of, you know, leave it open-ended for the game master to use those tools as they see fit.
Yeah, from a design standpoint, I think Age is very much designed to say, here is a framework, and then you all decide how you want to use that framework. Mm-hmm. And Starfinder, having evolved from Pathfinder, having evolved from 3.5, having evolved from 3rd edition through D20, and therefore original AD&D, etc., is very much a system that wants to tell you exactly what you can do. Mm-hmm. It sort of assumes here are the tasks that are possible, here are the spells that exist, here are the feats you can take, here's the equipment that's around, and you are much less able to just say, well, we'll hand wave and we'll say that something like this happens. And there are advantages and drawbacks to both.
Mm-hmm.
I know a lot of people who very much appreciate being able to look at a list and say, okay, I can do this and this and this, and now I know what my character does. But the drawback of that is that if you want to do something that it never occurred to us to give you any option how to do, you have to either kitbash that together yourself, and some people are very, very good at that. Some people make entire companies over that. Or you have to reskin something that's existing. The flip side of that is that with the Age system, it's really pretty easy to say, hey, can I do this thing? And you're like, well, that sounds like it's about as effective as this other thing, so we'll just say yes. But you have fewer things where you can just say, well, I'll make these choices, and now I know all the details about my character.
Mm-hmm. No, that's true. And some of that is just purely a consequence of history. You know, as you said, Starfinder has such a long pedigree to it that a lot of game rules within a system like that simply evolve over time as people take a fairly loose system to start with and come up with all kinds of examples of things you can do, and those examples get folded into the game over and over again until, you know, you have a lot of the game that's very defined years on down the road. I imagine if the Age system is around for 20 or 30 years, that, you know, its descendant will probably have a lot of similar qualities in some ways, that there'll be a lot more of, hey, we figured out all of these things and we're going to just tell you how we did them.
And one of the things that we tried to do when we were creating Starfinder was look at that pedigree and say, okay, here are the traits and inheritances that we want to keep, and here are the ones that maybe we want to revise or throw away, or mm-hmm. here are the little bugaboos that bother us. Like literally in Pathfinder, we never say that when you're dead, you can't take any actions, because we thought it was obvious. but there are people who were like, well, it tells me what I can do when I'm stunned. It tells me what I can do when I'm fatigued, but it doesn't say I can't do anything when I'm dead. That is, again, one of the drawbacks of that sort of we tell you everything design. But that right. does mean that in Starfinder, we carefully said, when you're dead, you can't do anything because you're dead.
Because you're dead.
What is dead, but not eternal lie?
Okay.
Well, especially when you're talking about a fantasy world where death is a temporary condition, I suppose that, you know, it can be important to be clear you're about
John
that.
Snow, huh? Jon Snow?
Jon Snow isn't even the most egregious example in that setting.
Right.
But it is one of those things that what seems obvious to a number of designers and developers and editors and playtesters, when you put it out and you've got 100,000 people reading and playing this game, mm-hmm. there will be some that start to make the argument that you wouldn't just say it's a grenade. You'd carefully say, and you can't reuse it.
Use it.
Mm-hmm. I don't want to say you get into the rules lawyer factor, but I don't want to not say that at the same time. I used to work in journalism, and that's one of those things is, you know, especially when in the writing process, you're just bouncing off other people who are in the bullpen with you, or, you know, modern publishing, the virtual bullpen.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You can't, whether you mean it to or not, you get some groupthink going on. There's, you know, community assumptions and a shorthand. And until you get the document, whether it's a game book or a news article or a novel, out in the wild, you know, being read by people who don't know you and have never talked to you. That's mm-hmm. when you really find out how effective it is, you know, at communicating the point you're trying to make.
True enough.
And, you know, sometimes there's blind spots you're completely unaware of because it, you know, it's just not on your radar. But
hence the term blind spot.
Huh?
Yes.
Hence the term blind spot. It's that known unknown and unknown unknown problem.
Right. You don't know what you don't know.
Well, have we properly defined blindness as a lack of awareness?
We have in Starfinder, yeah. We sure have. The problem we run into with Starfinder is that we carefully say what it is to be blind, and we carefully say what our acute senses and secondary senses, but we don't have a special condition for what happens if you're nose blind. It's just one, and mostly everyone can work it out, right? But it's just sure. one of those things. Speaking of adapting rules, I mentioned earlier, Steve, that the Expanse has some specific adaptations of AGE for the Expanse, and I referenced Churn, but I didn't want to be the one to go into it, so I wanted to see if you wanted to take an opportunity to talk a little bit about Churn in the Expanse RPG.
Sure. So the Churn is something that is actually mentioned in the Expanse stories. Amos mentions it as something from, you know, his background from when he lived on the streets of Baltimore, essentially. And basically the Churn is sort of how people tend to get caught up in big events. And how big events have a tendency to grind up a lot of smaller things and people in them. One of the things we wanted to reflect in the play of the game was that one of the hallmarks of the Expanse stories is there's always at least one or two moments in each Expanse novel where things take a really, really bad turn. And it's usually pretty unexpected, and it's like, oh wow, this is really, really bad. And we wanted to have some of that element built into the gameplay, and particularly for fans of the series who would be expecting something like that. So essentially the Churn is a tension mechanic that builds up over time. As the players, you know, make their way through the story, and generally speaking, the better they're doing, the more this tension ratchets up towards something happening, and chances are it's going to be something bad. And how bad depends on how long things go on, as far as that goes. So the tension builds over time. And the interesting thing about the Churn mechanic is that it's basically a game master mechanic for the most part. It's largely on the GM side of the screen. But at the same time, I've talked to Expanse GMs who find the mechanic very freeing in a certain way, because while we could have just said in the game mastering chapter of the book, hey, Expanse GMs, you might want to have just this point in your adventure where something goes really horribly awry, because that's, you know, the style of the Expanse. But a lot of GMs have said that they really like the fact that the game sort of gives them not just permission to do it, but basically gives them a rule that kind of says they have to. Because then they have a certain excuse for it, you know, and they can be like, well, sorry, players, you know, I didn't want to, you know, have, you know, an asteroid strike the planet you were on, but, you know, the Churn says.
Well, it helps set player expectation as well, right? So yes. If the rules say this bad thing will periodically happen, the players can say, well, okay, going into this, we read the rules. We knew that these terrible things would crop up.
Right.
As opposed to what happens in my Mutants and Masterminds superhero game when my players scream the famous line, keep your goddamn hero point.
Right. I was gonna say, it kind of reminds me of the Doom Pool mechanic in Marvel Heroic Roleplaying back in the day.
Mm-hmm. Yep. yeah, that's another example of a kind of a sort of tension building mechanic.
You know, bad stuff's going to happen. You just don't
right.
know.
You just don't know exactly what or when.
Right.
So cool. All right. So we're looking forward to that. That will be out soon. Like, as you said, in a few weeks. Mm-hmm. Anything else we should talk about you've done recently, Steve, while you're on?
Oh, gosh. Let's see. Recent stuff, the Basic Heroes Handbook for Mutants and Masterminds has been very well received. Folks may have heard it was nominated for an Origins Award.
Okay.
Yes. And that's a terrific introduction to the game system from a player perspective. It's like we were talking about earlier, a great example of having the benefit of an outside point of view. Crystal Frazier, the current Mutants and Masterminds developer, was able to come in and take on that project from sort of, you know, an outsider's perspective of somebody who really knew the game well. And so she did a really terrific job in terms of taking a lot of elements of the game and making them very easy for players to pick up from that book. So given my own tendency towards being somewhat impenetrable in my writing, I think that that's, you know, a huge advantage. We've got the Super Team Handbook for Mutants and Masterminds waiting in the wings. It is finishing up in production now and is going to be a really fun book. It's a subject that we have somehow not managed to tackle in any great depth for all of Mutants and Masterminds publishing history. So it's a great source book on how to create and build a team and all kinds of models and structures and things to take into account and some fun mechanical bits in terms of things like teamwork and cooperation and team feats, advantages, and other, you know, abilities that are very team focused. And there's a ton of worked example teams of all different kinds, ranging from all different sorts of power levels to provide examples and inspiration. So I think it's going to be a really fun book.
Cool. Look forward to seeing that. That reminds me of a question I was going to bounce off Owen. This is kind of lighthearted. Whenever I read about other people's Starfinders campaigns online, it seems like about half of them are playing Guardians of the Galaxy.
Who'd have thought?
Huh?
I said, who'd have thought?
Right.
Guardians of the Galaxy is popular. I'll be honest. I also know a lot of people that use it because they are big fans of Shadowrun or 40K.
Yep.
Or Star Wars. And those are sort of, in my opinion, at least currently, the big four science fantasy IPs that are out there beyond Starfinder.
Mm-hmm.
And there aren't a lot of RPGs that are designed to try and support RPG level play with individual characters who can be radically different and may not all belong to the same organization, who have equal access to advanced science and technology. And for that matter, even though we said that the Starfinder takes a very definitive approach, that's not how the rules work. We actually try and let your character concept be what you want. So unlike Pathfinder, for example, we don't carefully say, well, this class has divine magic and this class has psychic magic and this class has arcane magic. We just say, hey, it's magic, and magic works like this. And if your magic occurs because during a transit through the drift, your entire starship was driven insane and you're the only survivor and now you've got weird and mysterious powers, have fun with that concept. Magic's magic.
Mm-hmm.
And that helps a lot of people, I think, say, well, okay, no, a Yusoki rat folk isn't a raccoon. But if I want to be a raccoon, I can just take the rules for this mouse person and say, hey, I'm going to be a raccoon, and I'm going to have cybernetics, and my friend is going to be this plant person over here, and perhaps he only speaks one sentence, and we'll just do that.
Cool. I was going to say, just kind of an observation I had, when I would look at forum chatter about it, I was like, wow, everyone wants to play Guardians of the Galaxy. That's cool. And I did see a fair number of Star Wars games, too, but that makes sense.
Yeah.
Hey, Steve, before we sign off, anything icons related we should talk about?
I've got a couple of icons things in the works. I am working on another villain collection that I've been calling Icons Rogues. That is about, I guess, in the area of like 85% complete or so. I'm hoping to have it out in the next couple of months, if all goes well. And I have another source book collection of essays that I've been putting together, somewhat like Icons A to Z, but a bit more long form for some of it than some of the A to Z stuff. And that's probably about halfway done at this point, or at least for where I'd like it to be. But that one's been slower going because it's more long form writing than just, you know, putting together new villains, which I can easily do piecemeal.
Gotcha. Oh, I guess I should mention we had Dan Hauser on the Banff Discord, which I'll also plug in the show notes. He was promoting his doing some art in the channel, promoting his new hero pack, which is a thing that's happening.
Yeah, Dan is also doing a new hero pack collection, and I know he's I think he's still taking submissions for it, but that would be a question for him. But yeah, he's always done great stuff with those. The hero packs are entirely Dan's baby. He, you know, produces them from beginning to end, so far as that goes. And it really is largely based around his art, you know, and, you know, bringing a lot of people's characters to life. So.
Okay, so something else to check out. Well, hey, I would love to talk to you guys for another hour or so, but I need to get back and do the bidding of my soulless corporate paymasters. So we should probably wrap up. Is there any closing thoughts before we turn off today?
Please donate to the Gruesome Foes Kickstarter.
Thank you very much, Jacob. I just want to note that in case it's not clear, frequently fans sort of try to pit games or systems or preferences against each other. Mm-hmm. And in my experience, professional game designers mostly don't do that. We like lots of different games. It's one of the reasons we're in the system. So you don't have to like anything I made in order to play an RPG. Find something you like and have fun with it, because that's the whole point. So I'm happy to compare and contrast the Expanse and Starfinder. I don't want anyone to ever get the impression that I'm trying to claim one is better than the other. They're different games that are trying to do different things with different rules, and I'm a big fan of both.
Yeah, I certainly agree with that. You know, I actually have the occasional experience of people doing that with games that I have created, and I get, you know, so which one is better, Icons or Mutants and Masterminds? You know, and I'm like, they're different games. You know, there isn't such a thing as objective betterness, you know, as far as that goes, when, you know, games often have different design goals and, you know, speak to different tastes as far as that goes. So I like them both, obviously, you know.
Although clearly the solution, Steve, is that you need to write a third, or maybe at this point fourth, superhero role-playing game that is objectively better than all the other ones. Right.
Yes, and that would be my whole marketing campaign. It would be like, finally I've gotten it right, you know.
If people are pretty much wondering when the Age system will sponsor its own superhero game.
Yeah, so are we, actually. But I guess it's just a matter of time. In some ways, you're going to see some hints of some of that in Modern Age Companion, because there is a, I think we're calling them Extraordinary Powers section of it that's not quite full-fledged comic book superheroes, but does cover a pretty wide range of just characters with weird powers that aren't, you know, either spell casting or mental powers. That the core book covers. You'll see a bit of that. You could definitely do a very respectable sort of pulpish, you know, early comics or low-level superhero type comics stuff with Modern Age Companion.
Netflix superheroes kind of thing.
Yeah, easily.
All right, cool. Something to keep an eye out for in the near future. Jacob, any closing thoughts before we wrap it up here?
No, I think I've covered everything I wanted to talk about.
All right, cool. Well, hey, Steve, Owen, Jacob, thanks for joining us. It's always a pleasure to have you guys on.
Likewise.
Thank you very much.
Glad to be here.
And to all our listeners, thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next time on the Banff Podcast.